Today on Unexpected Hauntings, we go over a school that is haunted. We go over full body apparition story. And what do you do when you discover that a tunnel is underneath the house that you live in? And to top it all off, we have a new thing going on called Serial Killer of the Month. Stay tuned, spooky listeners.
Listen if you dare, as we unfold stories of unexplained happenings and phenomena. Write in at unexpectedhauntings739@gmail.com. This is where the unexpected and ghost stories are brought into reality. This is Unexpected Hauntings.
That's right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Unexpected Hauntings. Thank you guys so very much for being so patient. It has been unbearably crazy since the new year has started, so haven't had the time to do any episodes lately. But for now, I think the plan is to do episodes almost pretty much every Friday if we can. If I can sneak in another episode on Saturday, that would be really, really awesome to be able to do that. But thank you guys so much for being understanding, with everything. And, I really do appreciate it. Don't forget to write into unexpectedhauntings739@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. That would be amazing to be able to hear back from you. As I said in the intro, there is a new segment that we've added to our podcast, and it's a thing. I love docuseries. That's a huge thing that I love to watch or listen to. It's going to be Serial Killers of the Month. So I know that I do have some people that have some serial killers that they would love to have me talk about. So we'll get further into that near the end of the podcast. But of course, we're going to be doing paranormal stories, and we're going to start off with that. And then we're going to go further into the Serial Killer of the Month. And don't worry, if we don't get to your Serial Killer of the Month for this month, we will definitely get to it next month. I believe that someone has reached out to me a good while back of what serial killer they would love for me to talk about. So, just new things that we're adding in to the podcast, just to kind of add in a little bit of, my interests and interests that you guys have as well. I'm pretty sure everyone loves those kinds of docuseries, whether it be on Max, Netflix, it's just very interesting stuff. Of course, very dark. So if this does not, if this is not your cup of tea, then just be forewarned. It can be pretty graphic from time to time, just of what is being said about these serial killers and what they've done. So if I can also do a warning at the beginning and be like, if you're very sensitive to this kind of stuff, then, you're warned before we go into all of that. But yeah, of course, this podcast episode is going to be entitled The Full Body Apparition. That's going to be the next story we're going to get into. It's going to be cool. It's going to be great. I mean, who loves a good full body apparition story? It's very interesting. And, I don't know. It's weird. I know, like, everyone would freak out about full body apparitions, but if I were to see one, I think it'd be pretty cool. But of course, be safe about it as well. I know that a lot of people go out there like, oh, I want to do some ghost hunting. I want to do this and that. And they don't even have the proper protection before going into a ghost hunt, per se. And yeah, just be careful with that. Be careful, because that stuff could follow you home as well. Here we go. I hope that everyone is doing well this amazing week. And yeah, here we go. We're going to go into this story. This is about this person saying that they think the school that they worked in is haunted. And we're going to see what this is all about. This is through Paranormal Encounters on Reddit. And I don't know. I really like this. So I hope that you guys like this as well. Here we go. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Gonna start by saying I generally don't believe in the paranormal, ghost, etc. But I've been working in this school for just over a year now, and my perspective is beginning to get changed. I don't know if this is the right place to tell this in. If it is not, please guide me to the correct one. I think I'll start by just explaining the school. It's based in London, and it's a very old school that has been here for almost 100 years. The school is massive, 3 floors and loads of classes and rooms and etc. So my first experience started with something completely small, insignificant, but made me think more. I'm a PE teacher in the school, and I was in the school for a holiday club. This means there was nobody in the school other than me and my team and the children we're working with. The children are not allowed upstairs or anywhere without us. What happened was I was outside coaching and I looked up to the 3rd floor and there was papers in the room fluttering in front of the windows. Now this could obviously be explained by a drought or open window, of course. The strange thing is that at this point we had no access to the school top floors and they were locked and alarmed. The alarm will go off if any windows or doors are open. The main thing that happened to make me think happened 2 days ago. I was walking upstairs to my main office, 2nd floor. We now have access to all the floors, and I heard a person whistling, like full-on whistling. This whistling stopped as soon as I came off the stairs. And just a reminder, there is nobody in the school apart from my team, and definitely nobody on the 2nd floor. The next thing is that I left my office and I walked to the 2nd floor staff room, which is directly across from my office. End of that walk, I heard a child laugh and giggle. There's absolutely no way any children were on the 2nd floor, and no way I heard it was from downstairs. There has been other strange occurrences, but this is the first time I've really been unable to debunk it. All right, so that's interesting. I'd love to know more about the history of the school. It's very generic, but I like it though. I like it. Very interesting, showing the age of the school, of course, and gives you a good little visual of what the school looks like. I like the visuals in the story as well. Let us know what you think about this. Send us an email. And of course, we do have the Q&A on Spotify. We would love to hear from you on that. That would be amazing. Let us know what you think. That would be great. And a lot of children laughter is not good. A lot of children laughter is not good whatsoever. So take with that what you will. And let's get into the second story of the day. This is the My Full Body Apparition story. And we're going to go into this. And have not read through it yet. So I've kind of skimmed through it. And we're going to see how this is. Very interesting, though. I love all of the things that come out of the paranormal encounters, no sleep. I love these stories on Reddit. If you guys haven't checked them out, please do. They're insane. They're amazing and phenomenal. And as always, write into Unexpected Hauntings. We'd love to share your stories on Unexpected Hauntings. We'd absolutely love that. Here we go. We're going to go into my full body apparition story. Let's get into it. When I was around 12, 2008, 2009, my family, my mother and father, and I went to visit some relatives, my uncle, aunt, and cousin, in rural Tennessee. We were all sat in the living room, just talking, while the television played in the background. At some point, I went to use their restroom. The restroom is situated in the left in a hallway past their kitchen. There are no doors directly adjacent to the restroom door. I had a tendency in my youth to open the bathroom door before washing my hands as to not recontaminate my hands with germs when I exited the room. So I used the restroom, opened the door, and as I was washing my hands, I saw someone walking by the door in the corner of my eye. I feel it's important to note that the figure was moving in the opposite direction of the living room. The only rooms in the direction the figure was heading are the two bedrooms of the house. Other than those rooms, the hallway is a dead end. I also feel it's important to note that I did not only see this figure in my peripheral vision. It was very slow moving, and the moment it caught my eye, I turned my head with both eyes looking directly at the doorway. I saw the figure move past the center of the doorframe until it was out of sight to the left. The figure never once acknowledged my presence, stopped walking, or made any noise. The best description I can give of the figure is that it was an elderly woman, hunched over. Not hunched over far, but in the way many elderly people walk without being able to straighten their backs. The figure was wearing a seafoam green nightgown that wasn't very saturated, a very light seafoam green, with an almost lacy mesh kind of transparency to it, near the bottom of the dress. Enough so that I remember taking note of being able to see the legs moving. The figure wore very thick and rounded square glasses with a transparent brown frame. She had tight, curly, permed, likely a gray brown hair that was holding on to the last of his color. She was also a bit overweight. I saw her vividly. There was no transparency to her, nor was anything off about her. When I walked back into the living room, I asked the family who was there. All of the previously listened family members were still seated on their respective couches and chairs when I walked back to the living room. At this point, I was under the impression that an elderly relative of my relatives had arrived while I was in the restroom. They all reassured me that we were the only ones in the house and no one had come to visit after my parents and I. I doubled down, telling them I just saw someone walk past the restroom door. I even described, probably crudely, the woman I saw. My uncle immediately got up and began searching the house. He started in the back bedrooms and made his way back to the living room, thoroughly searching every nook and cranny along the way. There was no one else in the house. I kind of dropped it. It was weird, but it wasn't scary. I never once felt frightened. We moved on with the day, and that night I was too sleepy in my cousin's room with him. I had never been in that room prior to the night. Once I walked in, I immediately noticed a picture hung in the wall. It was the woman I saw. She had the same hairstyle and same glasses. She was the same size and had all the same features. I questioned him about this, and he told me that was his grandmother, which I knew they had gotten this house from, but it never clicked in my head. She had died in the living room of old age. He told me his room was her old room, and when his parents remodeled it for him, they left that picture up. At this point, I did get a little hesitant because he had a deer head mounted on the wall. I was a big fan of Evil Dead 2, and I knew if ghostly shenanigans were afoot, that thing was going to manically laugh at some point in the night. It didn't, though. I slept soundly through the night and never saw or heard anything else. I have been to the house countless times and never seen or heard anything else. I've never seen another apparition anywhere that I know of. So that's my rather unexplained event. I've told people I know countless times, but I've really written it out in a way like this before. I firmly believe I watched my cousin's deceased grandmother walk past the restroom door when I was at his family home. If anyone else has thoughts or even similar experiences, I would love to hear them. All right, so there's your full body apparition story for you. And that's an interesting insight because a lot of people, the places that they've owned that they're really proud of, they don't want to leave. So I do believe that this could very, very well happen. I mean, I don't know. I believe that this could be a very, very good happenstance of happening in IRL. And, you know, like I said, if they're really happy of the place that they've built, they have really good memories in there, they have an attachment to it, you know, if they've passed away and they're confused, they can have an attachment as well. It seems to me like they're just looking after the place. And so I think that could be a huge play in this story. If you guys would like to add any input, if you have any stories that are like this, please write in. We'd love to hear that. That would be so cool. We love full body apparition stories. They're so interesting, and they're pretty rare to find nowadays with full body apparitions. You know, mostly it's, you know, getting an EVP out there, or anything of that sort. It's really rare to hear stories about full body apparitions. Of course, I've had a full body apparition experience when I was in Charleston, near the church there, when I was able to see a soldier in the graveyard. That was a very creepy and eerie experience, to where you can see at least the whole body, you know, even if you don't see the feet, it's still, I think, considered a full body apparition. But let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. It would be phenomenal to hear back from you guys. Yeah, that's exactly how you can do that. Send in a media file, or send in a written up letter. Either or, I would love to be able to share your experiences. And I believe with that being said, we're going to go into our last ghost story, and then we're going to go into our new segment of the podcast. Here we go. This is an eerie story that is entitled, Last Week, I Discovered a Tunnel Under My Home. Here we go. Let's get into this story. I moved into the house a month ago. It's not big, nor has it been well maintained, but at least it's in a nice neighborhood. The price was low, too, and two bedrooms plus a lounge and a kitchen is more than enough for me now that the divorce has been settled. Now my relationship status may seem unrelated, however, I bring it up because when one is alone in an empty building, a blood-curdling scream is not something you would expect to hear. Located in a suburb just outside the center of the town, the house was abandoned by the previous owner. At least that was what the real estate agent told me when I bought the place. It was a little strange that many of the properties nearby were up for sale too, but I suppose the current economic climate isn't something to take lightly. The house is very old, in dire need of new paint job, and desperate for some modern fittings. It took me a while to get used to its style. At first, the creaky wooden floors creeped me out, especially at night, but the minor nuisance was quickly forgotten after being forced awake by a piercing cry for help. It was coming from the basement, but despite my best efforts, I couldn't find the source in my half-asleep days. Initially, I considered it to be a dream or auditory hallucination of some kind, but the sound of the scream stayed in my mind for days. For better or worse, yesterday I decided a thorough investigation was due. It took a lot of crawling around with a flashlight, but eventually I noticed that a certain section of the bottom of a wall was covered by a steel plate. I don't know how basements are usually made, so it didn't stand out at first, but after checking the edges, I found a discreet latch that once slid up, allowed me to swing the steel plate open. The gap was about the same size as an air vent, barely big enough to fit someone if they decided to crawl through. My gut instinct was to walk away, but when I bent down to peek in, the bloody scratch marks lining the floor were clear. Unfortunately, my conscience got the better of me. I got down onto my chest and began crawling through the claustrophobic space. My elbows scraped against the sides and bumped my head more than once on the ceiling above me. Movement was limited, so it took me a while to get through. Just before I reached the end of the tunnel, it dawned on me that because the space was so tight, I had no way to turn around. I would have been completely trapped if the passage had no ending. To say I was on the verge of a panic attack would be an understatement. After about 15 minutes, I exited the other side, collapsing onto a room that smelled like cheap cleaning liquid. I used my flashlight and scoured the room for details. I probably should have changed the batteries before beginning my journey because the light was pretty dim at this point. Even so, I immediately noticed a surgical table at the center of the room. I moved to the walls, following them in the hope of a door. Thankfully, I stumbled on a light switch before I eliminated my surroundings. I noticed a plaque next to it and read, Air Raid Shelter, Max Persons, 20. Once the light was on, I was struck by the shelves upon shelves housing hospital equipment. One section was filled with syringes and vials, while other featured gloves, masks, and aprons. The concrete walls and floor, in comparison to the modern medical furniture, were a startling contrast. Centering this facility of sorts was the surgical table I mentioned earlier. Accompanying it was a mobile table, meticulously lined with knives, blades, and saws. I didn't know what I was looking at. It was a windowless war shelter of some sort, but everything within it served a different purpose. Someone had been using the place, and judging by the smell, they had been there recently. I quickly realized that the tunnel I came in was one of several, each the same size, except for one. Amongst the openings was a tunnel double the height to the others. I still wanted to find the source of the scream, and since the tunnel under my home was very tight, to say the least, I decided that I had found my exit. In my new passage, I moved in a crouching position, as I was provided with more options for movement. My flashlight died once inside, but I continued forward in the hope of escaping the pitch-black labyrinth. At certain points, it felt like the walls were getting tighter, but maybe that was my mind playing tricks on me. No matter what, the tunnel was the stuff of nightmares, and every minute inside it was an exercise in mental and physical torture. At the end, I was greeted by a metal plate similar to that one I had opened to start the journey. The latch was in the same place, too, allowing me to quickly open it. Greeted by a basement almost identically to my own, a giant map behind a workbench was the first thing to catch my eye. It depicted the neighborhood with dark black lines leading from a single house to countless more. I wish I'd stayed longer to unravel the mystery, but it was only 5 minutes before the voices of a man and woman in the building above forced me to retrace my steps in a panic. Through the tight tunnels and passing the informal medical facility, eventually I was back home. I've tried convincing myself that the underground maze serves a logical purpose, but my mind always shifts the dark possibilities. Considering everything, the scariest part of all was not the macabre surgical table, nor was it the oppressive pathways to reach it. The thing that has me scared for my life is that I remember seeing in the corner of the map, stamped on the paper, was the logo for the Kruger Group Incorporation, the same real estate company that sold me the house. All right, so that's an intense story. You never know what's underneath your house. That'll make you sleep good at night, right? So he does. They don't know what that tunnel is all about. It looks like it is a surgical type room. Hopefully, it's not a torture type room. And it's by the same real estate company that is incorporating these tunnels. It seems to me like there's some type of illegal content going on in these tunnels. Stay safe Hell, if I were you and if I owned that house, I would concrete the hell out of that plate, that metal plate door. I would lock that, concrete it, whatever you can, so they can't get to you. I would not be able to sleep at night if I knew that there was a tunnel underneath my house that has surgical equipment and screaming going down there. It sounds like it's some type of torture chamber, and would not want to be in any part of that. I would love to move out as soon as possible and would not like to get into all of that mess. I don't know about you, but that's what I would do. That's exactly what I would do. Anyways, let's go ahead and get into our first ever serial killer of the month. Here we go. It is officially time for
Serial Killer of the Month.
That's right, everyone. It is time for Serial Killer of the Month. And I am so excited to be able to bring this to you guys. As you guys know, we love the docuseries. We love the serial killer stories. You know, they're just entertaining. They're sad. I don't know. It's just a mixture of everything. And I figured, why not kick off the serial killer of the month with John Wayne Gacy? He just sticks out, has a very insane story to begin with. And just is insane. If you guys have gotten a chance to watch the tapes of John Wayne Gacy on Netflix, you should. It's very eye-opening, it's very interesting stuff. And to say the least, our very first serial killer of the month goes to John Wayne Gacy. And we're going to talk more into this as the month goes on. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping that we can do more and more serial killers of the month. And here we go. We're going to talk more about John Wayne Gacy. We're going to start off with his early life. And then we're going to go and talk a little bit about him as he got the name of being the Killer Clown. Let's get into it. John Wayne Gacy was born at Edgewater Hospital in Chicago, Illinois, in April 17, 1942. The second of three children and only son of John Stanley Gacy and Marion Elaine Robinson. His father was an auto repair mechanist and World War I veteran, and his mother was a homemaker. Gacy was a Polish and Danish ancestry, and his family was Catholic. And then it goes further into forward into 1960. In 1960, at age 18, Gacy began involved in politics, working as an assistant precinct captain for a local Democratic Party candidate. This led to more criticism from his father, who called him a patsy. The same year, Gacy's father bought him a car. He kept the vehicle's title in his own name until Gacy had paid for it, which took several years. His father would confiscate the keys if Gacy did not do as he said. In April 1962, Gacy purchased an extra set of keys. In response, his father removed the distributor cap, keeping the components for 3 days. Hours after his father replaced the cap, Gacy left home and drove to Las Vegas, Nevada, with $136 to his name in the hope of residing with a cousin. Shortly thereafter, Gacy enrolled at Northwestern Business College. Despite having failed to complete high school, he graduated in 1963 and took a management trainee position with the Nunn Bush Shoe Company. In 1964, the company transferred him to Springfield, Illinois, to work as a salesman and eventually promoted him to a department manager. In March of that year, he became engaged to Marilyn Myers, a co-worker. During their courtship, Gacy joined the local chapter of the Jaycees. The same year, he had his second homosexual experience. According to Gacy, a colleague in the Jaycees piled him with drinks and invited him to spend the evening on his sofa. The colleague then performed oral sex on him while he was drunk. In 1965, Gacy had risen to the position of vice president of the Springfield Jaycees and was named in the third most outstanding JC in Illinois. John Wayne Gacy was an American serial killer and a sex offender who raped, tortured, and murdered at least 33 young men and boys in Norwood Park Township near Chicago, Illinois. He became known as the Killer Clown due to his public performance as a clown prior to the discovery of his crimes. So that is why he was called the Killer Clown. He actually used to, that was one of his side things that he would do, is he would dress up as a clown and go and do things. And he would say very, very explicit things, like that he can get away with stuff with being a clown, with people sitting on his lap. Very creepy shit, you know? I mean, very, very disturbed minded guy. He had so much, he had so much of a big head on his shoulders to where he could get away with all this stuff. And it was just insane. It was just crazy. And, of course, if you watch more of the documentaries of him, you'll understand and find out all the things that he did that were just insane and gross. And, we're going to go further into when he went to Waterloo, Iowa. And his life there. Here we go. Gacy and Myers married in September 1964. Marilyn's father subsequently purchased 3 Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants in Waterloo, Iowa. The couple moved there so Gacy could manage the restaurants, with the understanding that they would move into Marilyn's parents' former home. The offer was lucrative. Gacy would receive $15,000 per year, the equivalent of about $153,000 as of 2024, plus a share of the restaurant's profits. Gacy opened a club in the basement where his employees could drink alcohol and play pool. Although Gacy employed teenagers of both sexes, he socialized only with the males. Gacy gave many of them alcohol before he made sexual advantages if they rebuffed him. He would claim his advances were jokes or a test of morals. Gacy's wife gave birth to a son in February 1966 and a daughter in March 1967. Gacy later described this period of his life as perfect. He had finally earned his father's approval. When Gacy's parents visited in July 1966, his father privately apologized for the abuse he had inflicted before happily saying, "Son, I was wrong about you," as he shook Gacy's hand. In Waterloo, Gacy joined the local JC's chapter, regularly offering extended hours to the organization in addition to the 12 and 14-hour days he worked managing the restaurants. At meetings, Gacy often provided fried chicken and insisted on being called Colonel. He and other Waterloo JCs were also deeply involved in drug abuse, pornography, prostitution, and wife swapping. Although Gacy was considered ambitious and a braggart, the JCs held him in high regard for his fundraising work. In 1967, he was named Outstanding Vice President of the Waterloo JCs and served on the board of directors. The Assault of Donald Voorhees. In August 1967, J.C. sexually assaulted 15-year-old Donald Voorhees Jr., the son of Donald Edwin Voorhees, a local politician and fellow J.C. Gacy lured Voorhees to his house with the promise of showing him heterosexual stag films regularly played at J.C. events. Gacy plied Voorhees with alcohol, allowed him to watch a stag movie, then persuaded him to engage in mutual oral sex, adding, "You have to have sex with a man before you start having sex with women." Over the following months, Gacy abused several other youths, including one whom he encouraged to have sex with his own wife before blackmailing him into performing oral sex on him. Gacy also tricked several teenagers into believing he was commissioned to conduct homosexual experiments for scientific research and paid them $50 each. There's going to be more to continue about John Wayne Gacy on our next episode of Unexpected Hauntings. Stay tuned for the second part of The Serial Killer of the Month. And thank you guys so very, very, very much for today's episode of our full body apparition story episode. You guys have been so amazing. Thank you so much for your continued support. We hope to do this every Friday if we can. I'm going to try my best to do recordings beforehand so they can come out. I'm going to try and do 8 p.m. Eastern on Fridays. I'm going to go ahead and set them up to be sent out to you. And thank you so very much for all that you do. You guys are amazing. And with that being said, thank you so much for all that you do. Have a great and wonderful afternoon, evening, wherever you are. And we hope to hear back from you guys in our next episode. Don't forget to write into unexpectedhauntings739@gmail.com. We'd love to share your stories on our next episode if possible. And as always, stay spooky, listeners.